better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title, the Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
College football got a massive shakeup yesterday when Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic reported that the Big Ten was going to conference-only scheduling. A few moments later, really only a couple minutes later, the Big Ten confirmed that report and put out a message on their decision to go to conference-only football. Looks like the ACC is going to be doing that as well. The Pac-12, it looks like they're going to be deciding and possibly going that direction in the coming days. Big 12, not so much. And the SEC, not so much either. And we'll get into all those details coming up on the Morning Rush, the biggest college football news we've seen in the last couple days. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number always that you can call or text in. Streaming live on hitthatline.com. Our video streams on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. You can also find us on the TuneIn app as well. Loaded guest lineup this morning. We're going to have associate head basketball coach David Patrick joining us at 7:15. And then former Arkansas quarterback and current Fayetteville High School head football coach Casey Dick joins us at 8 o'clock this morning. So got this news yesterday. Tommy, you shot me a text, and I'd already seen it at that point, but obviously big news coming out of the Big Ten, and it's definitely going to be a shakeup in college football.
And, you know, question is, will this be the trend that's setting? The question that still is out there is, does this mean that college football will still be played? I'm a little more optimistic that maybe this is a path towards playing. We'll get into that thought here in a minute. But certainly what will be interesting over the next few days, maybe a week or so, or through July maybe even, Ty, is what do the other Power 5, what do the other four Power 5 leagues do? I think the conversations that we're already seeing, and one right here in our state, about this decision by the Big Ten and the effect it's having financially on non-Power 5 schools, the group of six schools like Arkansas State, who is set to lose $1.8 million out of their budget by not going to Michigan. How do they overcome that financial obstacle? I was listening this morning as Paul Feinbaum was on the show that precedes us with Golic and Wingo, talking with those guys about the MAC conference. They lose 11 non-conference games. Can you imagine the tens of millions of dollars? It's probably probably close to $20 million in funds for that league in non-conference games. So, I mean, there's so many tentacles that come off this decision yesterday that have so many ramifications across college football.
Brett McMurphy of Watch Stadium reported that the ACC is also going to be one of the conferences that plays conference-only games. But you mentioned tentacles, Tommy. One of the interesting tentacles out of this whole equation is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Obviously not within a college football conference, but according to multiple reports, they are still going to be a part of these conference schedules. That's also according to Brett McMurphy. He had a conversation with athletic director of the ACC, John Swofford, last month, and it looks like Notre Dame is still going to be participating. But you think about some of these schools, Tommy. Like, think about the service academies. Think about this. You said the MAC, or what? No, what conference did you just list?
The MAC.
Yeah, the MAC. I mean, all these other conferences, those are big revenue pieces of their budget. And they just have suddenly, just the Big Ten schools alone, we'll see. I don't think an announcement has come from the ACC just yet. It's just being reported. The Big Ten has actually reported on that. I mean, that's massive. That's a massive loss, Tommy, for their revenue and what they're expecting to make this college football season.
Yeah, and we say Notre Dame's not in a conference, and that's technically correct, but they play five, they schedule five ACC schools a year, so they're kind of a half member, if you will, of the ACC, even though they don't compete for their championship. This time, this era, may actually force Notre Dame to join the ACC. That would be the league that you would presume they would join, but who knows with the way college football may get completely shaken up, who will be in what league when all the dust settles out of this. But that's exactly right, Ty. I mean, the far-reaching effects this is going to have, and the financial effects it's going to have on the smaller programs, but I think even the larger programs, the Power Five programs, if the season doesn't happen, we talked about this yesterday, it's not like these programs sit on tens of millions and piles of cash just laying around to survive a rainy day, and this isn't a rainy day, this is a hurricane we're surviving. It's going to be very difficult if they don't play at least some form of a season to at least have the revenue from their TV distribution.
The Pac-12 has yet to decide. Nicole Auerbach, also The Athletic, reported that that is the case. Now, they are going to decide in the coming days. It looks like it's trending. It's probably going in that direction, but that is yet to be announced. The SEC, Commissioner, this is from Brandon and Marcello, who covers college football for 24/7 Sports, used to write at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and this was his tweet yesterday. He said, SEC coaches met this morning. A person involved with the call tells 24/7 Sports that the Big Ten decision has no effect on the message to the SEC this morning. So the SEC is going to wait as long as they can before making any decisions concerning the college football season. I know we mentioned the Ivy League is kind of a big deal, like as in the SEC is not going to follow necessarily the protocols that the Ivy League does. And it looks like, based on what Marcello is reporting, even the SEC, if the other conferences are doing it a certain way, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to follow suit in what the other conferences do.
Here's the thing by going to conference-only schedules. You narrow your target, you know exactly who you're playing, and you centralize your control. You can control testing, you can control environments, you control venues, you can control access, you control everything because the league can do that. You know who's coming in, you know who's going out. You have a much greater chance of containing any problems if you go to a conference-only setup. This is probably the best way, at least to, you know, as it sits here in mid-July right now, for some of these conferences to see a path to playing some games this year, whether it's 8, whether it's 10, whether it's fewer than that.
Yeah, and I'm just really curious to see the timeline on that. I think I will say this, Tommy. You said you said it's more likely that you'll see college football. The fact that they're shortening the target. What did you say?
Narrowing the target.
I think,
you know, when we spoke about this after this news came out, you thought this was maybe a first step towards the cancellation completely of the season. And that may be right. My take on it was just the opposite. They're trying to find a path to actually play some games. And by doing it this way, we can take all the neutral site games away. Because other than Arkansas playing A&M and other than Oklahoma, Texas, and other than a handful of, you know, the cocktail party with Georgia, Florida, other than a handful of conference games, nearly every conference game is played in a home venue, right? Mm-hmm. So if you do it this way and you put all games on campus, you eliminate one team from, you can get rid of these home teams going to the Embassy Suites in Rogers like Arkansas does. You can do away with that. You can control that environment, put them in their own beds, actually, the night before the game. You could just have more control over where your teams are at, where your coaches are at, and minimize the risk and exposure to the players you're going to have involved in the games. And I think what the league has got to do, if they're going to move forward, is figure out testing, how often you're testing, the protocols. It's probably going to be a league-run deal. I'm sure these are all the conversations they're having, if we're even going to have a season. I mean, I think this is all an effort to maybe find a path to moving ahead, torpedoes be damned.
I hope you're right, but here's what I was brought to the attention of by one of my buddies, Braxton, last night. This feels like the NCAA tournament. This feels like the SEC tournament. The Ivy League has already come out and said they're not doing it, just like they did with their conference tournament. They're trying to find different scenarios, whether it's no fans, whether it's no media, whatever the case may be. Tommy, again, I hope you're right, but that scared me a little bit last night and how he portrayed it, because if you look at the different situations with the NCAA tournament, with the SEC tournament, with the other conference tournaments, and you look at college football with what's happening right now, it looks eerily similar. Again, I hope you're right. I hope he's wrong. But I thought he made some good points last night.
The good news is it's July 10th. and not September 5th.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
I've been texting Peyton over the last day or so, and I think he's going to come on the Morning Rush sometime next week, so I want to preface that before we get into these comments. He went on the Elite Sport podcast of Gas and Sports with Quint Switzer and another guy, and he had some interesting comments to say. Maybe you've heard them, maybe you haven't. We'll get into them now. It was interesting. Most former Razorbacks say a lot of really good things about the university. Now, some occasionally will say here and there something bad, but there's some stuff that Peyton said that he wasn't too fond of. We're going to get into that coming up. I want to start with why he chose Arkansas. Conway kid looked like he was always going to the U of A, and this is why he chose the Razorbacks.
You're from Arkansas. It's a real small state. You're an Arkansas fan. And so in my heart, in my mind, there was no other place to go. But looking back on it, if I knew then what I knew now, you know, things would have changed, because there's a lot of things you should look at when you go to a college, as far as, you know, what offensive scheme are they running that best suits your skills? You know, who's the coaching staff? Can you relate with them? And there's a lot of things that you could look at. You know, but back then, you know, being a Razorback was, you know, like winning the Super Bowl if you're from Arkansas.
Tommy, we can hopefully ask him this next week if he ends up coming on, but what do you think he's got the biggest regret of choosing Arkansas? It seems like there's that tone in his voice that says, there's something about, well, what do you think that is?
I can't imagine it was style or scheme or philosophy, because they ran the football a lot. Maybe the regret was he was playing with McFadden and Jones, which maybe didn't leave him as many opportunities as he'd have gotten somewhere else, where he'd have been good enough to be the man in a lot of other places. You know, with McFadden and the attention he got in that offense, maybe the relationship with Nutt and his staff wasn't quite there. Maybe him and Danny Nutt, the running back coach, didn't quite hit it off, or have the relationship he would have liked, would be a better way to phrase that. I don't know. I don't want to speak for him, but I would lean more towards what he's saying is based on relationship than philosophy, because in that era, Arkansas was a heavy run team. I know Marcus Monk was a prime target, caught a lot of touchdown passes, but they ran the football obviously a lot with McFadden in that time that Peyton Hillis was there.
Tommy, what are the two dumbest stigmas in football? Putting you on the spot here. Two dumbest stigmas in all of football.
That linemen are dumb, would that be one of them you're looking for? I'm not sure what you're searching for.
White guys can't play running back, and okay, Black guys can't play quarterback. Well, okay. Patrick Mahomes...
I wasn't going there.
Well, Patrick Mahomes was the best quarterback in the NFL in all of football last year, and Christian McCaffrey was one, if not the best, running back of all of football. So
examples?
And the reason I bring that up is because he felt like there was a stigma surrounding him that was like, well, I'm a white running back, that's kind of the thing, and that he felt like that's why he didn't play. But then he was like, well, I was also playing behind Darren McFadden and Felix Jones. And he also talked about Houston Nutt, his relationship with Coach Nutt. I mean, listen, dude, like you said, he's playing behind Darren McFadden and Felix Jones, two of the greatest running backs, one particularly in Darren McFadden, in SEC history. That's like not an easy depth chart to crack. Like, I understand him being a little frustrated with the fact that, man, like, because he got there in 05, right? Or 04, excuse me. So a year before. Is that right?
I believe he was a year. Yeah, I believe that's right.
So 04, he gets there. D-Mac and Felix come in 2005, 06, 07. He's his senior in 07. So, listen, I get that, man. If you think you're going to be the guy, and all of a sudden, five-star D-Mac walks in the door, and you're just like, well, there goes my playing time. I understand that. Here's what he had to say about Houston Nutt and kind of the relationship he had there with team, and then how it kind of deteriorated in 2006.
You know, looking back on it, it was rough for me for a long period of time there. You know, I had issues with Coach Nutt and was kind of the utility guy, playing a little bit of everything. Never really found myself to what my skill set was or what, you know, they really used me for. I was kind of used for everything. Heck, even punt returns and kickoff returns. I mean, I was used for everything. The running backs I had in front of me, Darren and Felix, I mean, probably two of the best running backs that ever played the game as far as in the college level. You know, Coach Nutt, overall, I think he is a great man. You know, I think that he had a great heart. I do think that he kind of let things get away from him at the end just because of all the pressure with the Mitch Mustain and Gus Malzahn coming in during that time to where there was a power struggle. And it kind of separated the team from Coach Nutt's side to Coach Malzahn's side.
And we've talked about that pretty extensively, what happened in 2006. And you heard Peyton address the fact that he was behind Felix and he was behind Darren, which no running back in college football would want to do that challenge because of how good those guys were. But Tommy, based on what he said, it seemed like he expected to come to the U of A as a pretty highly recruited kid out of Conway, at least to Arkansas, and play a little more. And then he got used in fullback situations, out of the backfield and stuff. It sounds to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that he feels like that his needs and his skills weren't necessarily used to what he thought they should have been at Arkansas.
Here would be my opinion. He was not a good enough tailback to put him in there ahead of Darren McFadden and more carries. But he was too good a football player and athlete to not find a spot for him to play. So if you had to put him in the slot or put him in at fullback or put him in as a punt returner, you were trying to find places to put him on the field.
Mm-hmm.
He was too good not to play, but he wasn't better than Darren McFadden. I that would be my evaluation of the situation.
I think that's a perfect evaluation, to be honest.
I think between him and Nutt, I mean, the thing about Peyton, and you weren't around in the media then, you love to go talk to Peyton Hillis after practice because you never knew what he was going to say, and he had very little filter, and as he showed us here in this podcast and why you love talking to him, he told you the unabashed truth. And I remember a handful of instances. There weren't many, but there were a few where he spoke with the media after a practice or after a game. And, you know, there was obviously some tension during those times. And, you know, he would say some things that you wouldn't, that weren't the company line. We'll just put it that way. And I think that you know, that did not settle well with Houston. But people love talking to Peyton because you felt like you were going to get a straight answer or at least something that wasn't polished over by the sports information department. And I think that probably rubbed Houston raw behind the scenes would be my guess. It's just my opinion.
Tommy, back in the day with SIDs and how they went about interviewing players after practice, could you go up to anyone or were they still selected after practice?
I don't remember.
I mean, I know that was more Ruskin's theme, but I didn't know if, like...
I'm trying to just remember how they functioned, because that was back when Houston would meet with the media on Sundays. We would go in the old Broyles Center downstairs in his conference room in his office and meet with him on Sundays was the big deal rather than the Mondays we've kind of done the last few years. And players, I'm trying to remember how they were made available after games. It seems like they would select four or five after practice, if I remember right. But you could request some, kind of similar to what we do now. So I don't necessarily remember the process of how it was. But if you wanted to talk to Peyton Hillis, you got a chance. But he got the thigh bruise and he got injuries, and it was amazing after a few things he said along the way, his availability became a little less available.
Craig in Greenwood texted and he said he was a fullback. He wasn't even supposed to be competing with Darren and Felix. He got enough exposure with the Hogs to wind up in the league, right? What did he play running back at Conway, Tommy?
He was the stud. I mean,
yeah,
he could play
like
anything
2,000 yards, right?
Yeah, I remember the first time I laid eyes on him, I was doing play-by-play for a local high school, and they were playing in a jamboree at Springdale, and Conway came up, and there was three or four teams there, and I'm standing down on the field. It's a very casual deal. It's not a real game. It's just a practice with several teams, and I'm watching Conway because everybody's heard about Peyton Hillis, and I want to see this guy up close because all you've heard about is how he destroys people. And so I'm down field level because I want to see this for myself. And he lines up as a fullback, and he takes on the defensive end and just smokes him, runs him over. The linebacker steps up, he smokes him, and the corner runs the other direction. He wants nothing to do with it.
No part of it.
Peyton Hillis was just bigger, faster, stronger than everybody in high school. And in most cases, that was the case in college, too. He was more physical, and he had the speed to go along with it, and that's why he was a coveted player. He carried the football a lot and touched it a lot in high school because he was the best player on the field.
And I know sometimes you can't use that brute strength and power when you transition from high school to college, and definitely not from college to the NFL, because everyone is that much tougher, that much more in the weight room and stuff. But, I mean, Tommy, if you look at his offer list back in the day, Bama, Florida, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Tennessee, four-star kid. This was a guy that's highly coveted.
He was big time.
And he ended up choosing Arkansas because, as you heard earlier, Arkansas was like winning the Super Bowl back in the day. But what was puzzling to me is this is what he said, what Arkansas means to him now.
It doesn't mean a lot to me now, honestly. The past year and a half, 2 years, I've been trying to ask to be on the staff in some capacity to help, you know, in any way I could.
So he's reached out. I don't think he's, and we'll get into more of the clips coming up, but it seems like he's a little burned and a little taken aback by he trying to reach out and having conversations with U of A about coaching in some capacity, and they either haven't responded or haven't given him a job, and he seems a little frustrated by that, which, listen, that's understandable. He did a lot of things for the U of A in football side of things, but Tommy, you said this before. You can't give every former player a job. It just doesn't work out like that. You can't do that. So, listen, not everyone, if everyone wanted a job at the U of A, they wouldn't have any positions whatsoever. And just because you're a former player doesn't mean you make a good coach, whether it's a GA, whether it's a running backs coach, and most certainly not the head coach. So just, and that's, again, there's a lot of fans that always like seeing former players as coaches. And I get that. I understand that. It's sentimental. It's special. But Tommy, sometimes the guy that didn't even play football, aka Bill Belichick, is a better coach than the former player. That's just how it goes, man. Yeah.
Well, a guy we celebrated a week ago, Charles Ripley, one of the best coaches of any sport in our state, wasn't a player. He was team manager and became one of the best coaches we've ever seen in Arkansas. So, yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily have to be a five-star athlete to be a great coach. Generally, it doesn't work that way. But, you know, as far as him reaching out to the last year or two, so I'm assuming he's talking about Chad Morris' staff and trying to be a part of that, he should say thank you for not being a part of that mess.
Good point.
And I know there was a lot of former players that are irritated by the way they felt treated during the Bielema era and limited with their access, not really treated with a welcoming attitude. One thing Chad Morris tried to do was welcome former players and Letterman back in, allowing them to attend practices. But, you know, I don't know if he's got sour grapes over not being offered a coaching job, if he's bitter about that. But, you know, as you said a moment ago, and that's, it's right, you can't give every former player a coaching spot or a GA spot or some role within your program, and not everyone, even though they may go on somewhere else and have success, is a fit within your program at that time. It's about timing and fit a lot of times.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's no question Peyton Hillis was a tremendous football player, not only in college, and was a part of a lot of wins, and I always wonder if he had been healthy for that LSU game, would things have been different? How would the season have been different? If the drama and all that, but just you think about his injury at the end of that 06 season, how are things potentially different? You know, he had a really nice career in the NFL. You know, you think about how long a running back's career is, concussions and just injuries limit them, and that's exactly what happened with Peyton. You know, he has nothing to be ashamed of. I can't evaluate whether or not his coaching career is where it should go, but these guys want to stay connected to the game, and I know, is he still at Siloam Springs? He was coaching or volunteering at Siloam Springs couple 3 years ago.
In the podcast, he said he was in a town one or two cities away from Fayetteville. So
he had been at Siloam because I'd been over there for a game, and he was on the sidelines. He's not hard to spot. So so I know he had been there.
Up and talk to him? Come on, Tommy.
Actually, I did. So
you didn't get his number? Come on, Tommy.
That wasn't the time or the place, but. So I know he's been in the area and coaching with some high schools, which we've seen here in this offseason is a trend with former Razorbacks getting full-time coaching positions and working towards that. So I would imagine if he wants to do the work and get the certification and the things that are required, just like Ryan Mallett and Bray Cook, and we can go down the list of what?
Colton Jackson, Joe Adams.
Five or six guys that we've talked to and had several of them on the air in the last 3 weeks that have gotten high school coaching jobs. And not all of them went to school to be coaches. and get teaching certificates. They've gotten, what is it, Jenkins, alternative coach or teaching certificates? Or
yeah, teaching certificates. There's different,
you know.
There's a whole lot of different ways they can go
about
it.
There's a whole lot of ways to do it. You know, so you can, there's ways to enter the profession, even if you didn't go to college for that. If he's willing to do that, and maybe he has, I don't know. And I bet someone would love to have him as part of their program.
If you're just hopping in on the conversation, we're talking Peyton Hillis. He went on the Elite Sports Podcast on Gas and Sports and had a few things to say about Arkansas. I'm in contact with him now. Hopefully, we will get him on next week. One of the things we're talking about is coaching, and he wants to coach up there, obviously. And he's had some good things to say and some bad things to say about the current head coach of Arkansas. He hadn't met Sam Pittman, but he said he's heard good things. But he didn't have much to say about the former head coaches of Arkansas.
But they're not going back to the roots. You know, they're not getting any Arkansas guys that actually care about the university. You know, not bringing coaches that, you know, have ties. I know a bunch of coaches that I played for, you know, try to get the head coaching job, and they don't want them. The athletic director, no Arkansas guys. And, you know, who's going to care more about the university than people that actually are from Arkansas that have played there and want them to win? And it seems like the more money you are, the dumber they are. Because if Arkansas, especially now that Missouri has came to the SEC along with Texas A&M, we used to get that talent from Louisiana, Texas, and Missouri around there. But now that since they're in the SEC, we're not getting that talent no more. So we really need to either do two things, start bringing people in that care about the university, or two, actually put some money into a head coach that is going to come in and win instead of these guys that you never even heard of.
It sounds like that was more of a shot at Chad Morris than anything, Tommy. And listen, I understand former players being angry with his performance as a head coach. 2-10 the first year, didn't even finish the second year because he was let go. But again, like we were just said, it's not all like you love the former Razorbacks. You love the Arkansas connections. Sam Pittman has one. He didn't go to school here, but he said he grew up a Razorback fan. But again, Tommy, that doesn't always work. Bobby Petrino had success here. Did he have any affiliation to the University of Arkansas? No. Frank Broyles did not go to school here. Did he have success at Arkansas? Yes. Like it's one of those things. Like
Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz.
Hatfield went to school here.
I understand that. But at the same time, it's not the magnitude of success. It's not the measuring line of success. You can be successful at the U of A as a head coach, even if you didn't go to school here, even if you didn't have connections here. Tommy, you just got to be a good coach, man.
No, you got to be a good coach, and that involves being, first and foremost, I think, a good recruiter that you can confidently go in and sell yourself and your program to get the kids, and then you got to go win ball games. You know, it starts with getting the talent. And we've seen coaches that he'll probably come up with some great game plans and be good X and O guys, but if you don't get players, you don't last long. So that's what it's all about in the end is, first and foremost, you got to recruit. And there's a lot of guys that can coach the X's and O's.
So. Thought he also had some interest, and you mentioned X's and O's. One of those guys, Bobby Petrino.
You know, when Petrino was there, the reason why he had so much success is because he didn't have the talent to compete with the Alabamas or the Floridas or the Georgias at that time, but he knew how to create mismatches. And we did have a good quarterback at that time. We haven't had one since. I think that, you know, is really above average. You know, he knew how to create mismatches because we didn't have the skill set.
Couple things to take away from that clip. One, BP had talent up there. Tyler Wilson, Ryan Mallett, Joe Adams, Greg Childs, Jarius Wright, Nile Davis. I mean, those are just offensive guys. Jake Beckett, Tank Wright. I mean, I can go on and on and on. There was talent up there. Two, Tommy, would you say Brandon Allen is above average quarterback? Not the duration of his career, but really his senior year, the final seven games, I would say he was an above average quarterback.
Well, I mean, if you want to cherry pick, anyone can have an above average highlight reel. So, I mean,
okay.
I think he had an average
blank
career.
Point. You think it's just average, not above average?
By SEC standards,
okay.
And that's what counts as SEC standards.
Okay. So anything else to nitpick out of that clip?
Well, I mean, I'm not going. Listen, Peyton Hillis has got a more trained football eye than you or I. So I'm, you know, but he's dead on. Now, I think Arkansas had more talent than he's probably wanting you to lead you to believe. But he's exactly right. Bobby Petrino found a way to scheme up. But I think Bobby Petrino did a good job of also recruiting the in-state talent and getting some good kids. Was his roster as good as Bam and LSU? No. No one, and that's why he didn't beat those teams. That's why he didn't, he did beat them to go to Sugar Bowl, but didn't beat them the second year when they were ranked 1, 2, and 3, that second year. So, that's exactly it. You got to find a coach that can get good enough talent and then use scheming to win those 50-50 games or those 70-30 games, I guess, maybe.
Okay. Point blank question. Who wins, 06 or 010 Arkansas team?
I think 06.
Really?
I think.
We might have to get into that next segment. I thought you'd go 010. Really?
I've never contemplated. How do you go against McFadden, Jones, Hillis? How do you go against that ball? A team that can control the ball and get first downs the way they could. That defense, the defense of 06 was better.
Defense.
A lot better defense. I know it's easy to point to those wide receivers. Let's not forget about that defense of the 06 team.
As well-rounded a coach as I've been around, from the recruiting aspect to the X and O's, game preps, practice and individual skill development, and someone that has NBA experience as well, having worked for the Houston Rockets.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush, going straight to the phone lines, welcoming in Coach David Patrick here on the Morning Rush, new associate head coach of the Arkansas men's basketball program. Coach Patrick, thanks for making some time for us this morning.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for having me on your show. Couldn't be happy to be here.
Absolutely. So, Coach, we were talking with Rivals basketball analyst Corey Evans earlier this week, and he gave us an interesting piece of information that neither Tommy or I had heard at this point. You helped Eric Musselman get hired at LSU. Can you take us back through the process of how that went down?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Coach Musselman has been a great friend. He worked for a friend of ours, Hank Egan, at San Diego. And my former boss, Randy Bennett, worked for him when I was at St. Mary's. So our relationship probably started when he was back, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors and Sacramento Kings. And so our relationship probably dated back 20 or so years. When we had a spot open at LSU, I knew the talent that we had coming in there with Blakeney and Simmons and prospective NBA guys. I asked Coach Johnny Jones. I think Mus would be a great hire for us because of his NBA pedigree and also his ability to relate to players. And so that's kind of how we got over to LSU. We flew over, and obviously he liked it, didn't love it as much as Arkansas, but liked it, and the kind of the rest is history.
Coach, you got a chance to come up and visit Coach Musselman, Mrs. Danielle, and the Musselman family last year in 2019. I guess you came in as an assistant, but you probably got to see a little more of Fayetteville. Just kind of your early impressions of Northwest Arkansas and campus and everything that goes up there.
You know, I'm literally walking the campus now. So I got in actually the day before yesterday, and I just got off the phone with a former colleague of mine and said I'm blown away by the campus, the facilities, all the stuff in the city. I've been kind of just driving around because I'm staying in a hotel here, just trying to figure out, where my wife and I will end up staying with our kids. But I'm actually blown away, to be honest, by everything they have here. You know, you don't know when you fly in and you charter in and you go to a hotel and go to a game what each city has. But this place is special now. I know why they've had so much success here.
Coach, you're a Australian native from Melbourne. What's basketball like there? How does it compare to what we see here in the United States?
Look, I think the game has evolved. You know, it's back in the 90s, and where I kind of fell in love with Arkansas, they started throwing college games on about twice a week. And so they threw on like the old Lee Mayberry and Todd Day games back then, and so there's been a love for basketball, I guess, since the Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson days. And so the game is the second highest played sport in the country, behind their football over there. And so it's played by a lot, men and women. And to see the growth of the game, I think we have the most number one picks in the world, the city of Melbourne, that are currently playing in the NBA.
Wow.
Tells you how big basketball is over there.
You're coming to Arkansas after two seasons as the head coach at UC Riverside. What is it about this job? What is it about this opportunity that led you to leave a head coaching position? You don't see that often, to be a top assistant.
Look, I've been blessed to have opportunities to leave before, even after my first year as a head coach. I just didn't want to, you know, it would have to be the right job and the right person. But, you know, I went to high school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and played my AAU ball down there as well. And so I've known how good Arkansas is. I know the history, the tradition. And, you know, in my mind, it's one of the top jobs in the country, not only from a basketball perspective, but from an athletic department perspective. And when they call, anytime you have to listen. And then it was a lot easier, you know, to have a friend in Mus and a coach I respect, you know, to come here. You know, if it was some other SEC job, maybe not so. But when Arkansas comes calling, you have to listen. And they sold me, and I knew how you could win a national championship here if you put the right pieces in place.
New Arkansas Associate Head Basketball Coach David Patrick here with us on the Morning Rush. Coach, you got a chance to play under Jim Boeheim, one of the legendary college basketball coaches in the history of the game. What are one of the biggest takeaways that you take away from Coach Boeheim?
Look, I just think his abilities make us compete every night, and also to make team. You know, on our team, we went to the national championship in 1996 and lost to Kentucky, but he made us compete every single day in practice and every night. And he formed team, you know, the bond that he made us have within our team, you know, was huge. And so the reason he's had so much success. You know, we only had one NBA player in John Wallace back then, but the competitive nature of our team was something that I'll never forget. And he's still doing it to this day, you know, which is hats off to him. You know, when I was 18 years old, I didn't get all the yelling and all the pushing through drills that he put us through. You know, you don't get it at that age. Mm-hmm. But now, at 40-plus years old, I see how it's helped. And it's the same stuff I do now as a coach, the stuff that I probably hated as a player.
Coach, people forget, in 95, if not for a timeout technical foul call, Syracuse probably beats Arkansas and wins that game. And I don't – you weren't on that team the previous year, correct?
No, sir. I wasn't on that team, but it's probably the reason I ended up at Syracuse, believe it or not.
Wow.
So, you know, I had a high school workout that day, and the day after you guys beat Syracuse, and Coach Boeheim flew literally from after the game. Him and his assistant coach Bernie Fine flew to Baton Rouge on the charter to come see me work out. And at that point, I was leaning towards that purple and gold school down the street. I ended up, you know, they talked me into coming up there on a visit. About 2 weeks later, you know, they had lost this real good player named Stephon Marbury and Wayne Turner. So, you know, they needed a point guard. I went up there, and kind of the rest is history. But, you know, if Arkansas loses to Syracuse back then, they don't come to Baton Rouge, and I probably don't end up in Syracuse. So it kind of put two worlds together for me.
Yeah, small world. Hey, give our audience an idea of what the day is like in the life of an assistant coach. I don't think we always have an idea or a perspective on the demands on the time and what the smartphone has done to really make the job more 24/7.
God, you know, I started 15 years ago. I couldn't even text back then. You know, you could call once a week, and so it made life a little easier in that respect. You know, now your day starts up with, you know, you say hi to your wife, and then you're checking your text messages and making sure either which prospects have texted you or which coaches may have texted you. And then you got to start figuring out. I usually go on my morning walks and start texting or calling prospects. And this world, this game has become so global. It's not only the kids in Arkansas or Texas, Louisiana. You got to get on now. You've got to touch some of those kids around the world. And so it's a 24-hour deal when it comes to recruiting, which was not the same probably 10 years ago because of the limitations that were in place back then. You know, and then you're in the office now, and I've only been here. My first day was yesterday in the office, but, you know, you're hopefully you gaining knowledge in terms of how your team's going to play and just trying to figure that part out. So it's a 24-hour job, but something you love. And if you don't love it, it's going to be hard to succeed at this level.
How has the transfer portal changed the way you go about the way of constructing a roster? We obviously know that Eric Musselman's a fan of using the transfer portal. What's your take on that, and how involved have you been in that up until this point?
Look, I think it's a big component of college basketball, and I can only see it getting bigger. Obviously, Musselman is a pro at it, but it reminds me of my days in the NBA. You know, it's kind of like checking the free agent tracker, and you've got to, you know, it helps if you have spots available to be able to insert an older player with more experience, even though it may be from a lower level. Sometimes that maturity and can help you, can upgrade a program quicker. And so you got to be on it. You know, you have to be on it, and you have to know, you know, leagues around the country and figure out what leagues can play in the SEC. You know, I don't know how many transfers you can take at this level, but I know there will be a sprinkle of them within our program for sure.
Arkansas basketball coach Patrick with us here on the Morning Rush. Coach, when you're talking to recruits, what do you tell them about your relationship with Ben Simmons?
Look, I think the main thing is I was a, you know, everyone says they're a player's coach, but I think I truly am. You know, I just finished playing the game, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, but I still get out there on the floor with them, and I'm going to be the one helping them develop. You know, I'm not going to throw them with no knock on managers or GAs, but I'm going to spend time with them on the floor, which some coaches don't. You know, I even did that as a head coach, so my hope is to continue to do that as an assistant coach. And then I think when you're talking about Arkansas, I mean, your ability to be on the floor with a Corey Williams, the Eric Musselman, and, you know, I'm the last man on the totem pole in terms of experience on the floor. I think, I don't know what other staff in the country has that kind of experience for those that are trying to get to the next level.
And, Coach, for those who don't know, you're his godfather, so just kind of the relationship, I know, being over in Australia and stuff, like, how did that form back in the day?
Look, so, you know, Ben Simmons is my godson, and the reality is I played on the same club team as his dad, David, and Ben wasn't even thought of when I met David in 1989. And so David kind of brought me up, Ben's dad, as I was, you know, raised by a single mother over in Australia when we moved there. And, you know, when Ben was born, David asked me to be his godfather and kind of look after him the same way he looked after me. And who would know when he got to about the age of 15 that he'd be a pretty good player. I wanted to play football. That's how crazy I am. I didn't think I'd be that good at basketball. So what do I know?
Don't tell Musk that. He'll be wondering about your evaluation skills.
I know, man. I know. He was like 6'7". I'm like, you know what? You know, he hadn't grown into his body yet, but he's killing it at football. Why don't we just let him play AFL football, which is just training football? But, you know, he wanted to come over here and play, and I guess the rest is history from there.
Yeah. How is it? Cause none of us are moving our families around in the midst of coronavirus and moving from halfway, you know, the West Coast to here. How does that work for you and your family? Because I know that can't be, it's never stress-free moving, but in the midst of all of this, that's got to add a burden of stress to you and your wife and your kids.
Gosh, it's not easy, but I will say this, and this is the truth. I've never seen my family more excited to move, and we've moved a lot. You know, I think this COVID that's placed upon us is giving us a lot of family time, probably too much for them, for their liking, for me to be at home. you know, the chance to move back closer to home, my wife's, you know, North Louisiana, it helps. But, you know, it's stressful in terms of trying to sell a house, buy a house. At least in California, the market's pretty good, so hopefully we can get off our house here in the next couple of weeks. But then coming here and trying to find the best place to live will be challenging. I think it helps us to Danielle. Musselman's here, and she's kind of his head coach. She's really his boss, and she'll be telling my boss, Cassie, where we need to live and what schools we need to go to.
So how's your social media game? Because you got to have a pretty good one to hang in there with Mus.
I know one thing. When I came to Arkansas, I had about 100 followers before I came here, I had about 5,000 in the course of a week. So I'm trying to pick it up. You know, it's good. I cannot keep up with Musk, but it's solid. It's solid. I need to get it. It's probably a C. I got to get it to a B or an A in this next few months.
Coach Patrick with us here on the Morning Rush. Coach, I know a couple of the GAs, a couple of the student managers there on campus, and one of the things they told me when Musk initially got to campus is he never leaves the building. Like, they feel bad when they go home from the Eddie Sutton practice facility because he's still there. And so just, like, getting to that mindset, looking ahead to this season, just being around Coach over the years and stuff, the work ethic that you know you're going to be expected to have this upcoming year.
Look, I think that's the reason one of the reasons I came is not to be in the office all day, but I think it's more for the competitive edge and that he has. And he's won everywhere he's been. And, you know, a lot of it's because he works harder than most, you know. I pride myself in trying to be that way. I try to be that way as a head coach, a player, and an assistant. And so it's probably natural to me, you know. I think that's the only way you win. I think you got to work smart, but you got to work hard. And I know Musk does that. Because even when I was in California, it texts me at all hours in the morning and all hours of the night asking stuff. And so you know how dialed in and he wants this place to be and how dialed in he is to win.
And, Coach, with the incoming freshmen we've seen, whether it's Devontae, whether it's KK, whether it's Moses, whether Jalen, they've been putting in the work this offseason. You often see it on social media and stuff. And then just the other guys on campus already, it seems like they've been putting in a ton of offseason work and effort. Do you think some of what Musk is doing, they see what he's doing, when they see what you're doing? Do you think that translates and is kind of pushed on to the players in a sense?
I think it is. I think the bar is raised high here, you know, and it's your responsibility to get to it, you know, and I know Musk and the staff won't lower it, and I think these freshmen, as talented as they are, trying to get to it, doing everything they can to get to it, whether it's physically, a lot of it's mentally. You know, when you come in as a freshman, as good as you are, you still have to get caught up with the college game, and I know, even yesterday we spent some time with them, you know, over Zoom, so they're continuing to learn, and you know, it's because of the demands put in front of them, but the demands to help us win, you know. And I think most people that come here are coming here to win an SEC championship and try to play at the next level or be the best player they can, the best student-athlete they can. So it'll be a fun time, and I've seen this group of freshmen from afar, but now to have the ability to coach them and the returners will be a special experience.
Coach, what are the challenges with the extended dead period, no summer basketball to speak of, no EYBL, no summer circuits, the limited evaluations? What challenges does that present, not just Arkansas staff, but just, you know, college basketball as a whole, moving forward when looking at 21s and 22s? What extra work do you got to go do now to have a better evaluation when you can't see them in the summer?
You know what, I think the hardest thing is typically this time of year you can get kids to come up on campus and unofficial. You have your camps coming on where you can get some young underclassmen or women on campus to really just see what your campus has to offer. That's harder in this temperature. You know, it's good to show Zooms and all that kind of stuff, but it's not that personal touch that you typically have. So that's become more challenging, you know, I think over this period. And I've even found that here, as good as the facilities and everything else is, it's different when you're not being able to walk on campus. And I think just face-to-face contact with prospects, you know, I think if you can sit down and look a prospect in the eye and they can look you in the eye, or their parents or coaches, that helps, you know you're trying to hand your child over to a group of coaches to look after for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are a lot of the challenges that are in place, you know, and some people aren't skilled on Zoom, and so that sometimes becomes trickier. You know, I'm a pro now. I wasn't back in March. Those are all the kind of the challenges that come in, during this COVID, because where you could probably get a leg up, especially in this state with all the fine players they have in 21 and especially 22, to not be able to get them on campus during this period becomes a little bit challenging.
Yeah, I think we've all learned some new computer skills the last few months, haven't we?
No doubt about it.
You're 44, right?
Yes, sir.
Wife, two.
I feel like I'm 24 though.
Yeah. What do you like to do when you're not doing basketball?
You know, I read a lot of leadership books, or I'm listening to podcasts. I hate to say this, but my Xbox 2K game's not bad, so I can
with my
daughters. That's, you know, that's probably it. Believe it or not, I like to travel. If you look at my passport, when we can in the summer. But yeah, just, you know, kind of try to shut down. But it's all related to basketball. If you know, leadership, it comes back to this. But it's what I love.
Where's the best place you've been before all this chaos? What's the coolest trip you've been on?
Well, I'm born in Bermuda, so it's hard to say. Bermuda's not a great place, but
Australia's in your background.
Yeah, Australia's in my background, so that's not bad either. But I think Aruba, which sounds like down in the Caribbean, we love that place as a family. So it's not as expensive as Bermuda, and so you can tell it goes a long way. Yeah. But we love it down there.
Coach, before we let you go, I don't know all the NCAA rules and regulations, but are you like hopping on with recruits on Xbox Live playing 2K? Like, is that one of the ways you're recruiting them, is showing your 2K game?
Not yet. No, we're not allowed to do that. Not yet. But you know what? That's a good idea. I can post my game on Instagram or Twitter now and have Must retweet it, and they'll be able to see it.
Let's go. Yeah, just give credit to the Morning Rush for that idea. So, new associate Arkansas basketball coach David Patrick, kind enough to make some time for us here on the Morning Rush. Coach, we really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, and I can't be more excited to be a host.
To have a senior quarterback in here, he's not panicking. Most important thing is to get the first down. Don't worry about the clock. Just get the right play call.
He's less than a yard. He's going for it all. He's got a receiver in the end zone. It is caught by Arkansas. London Crawford comes down with the ball. What a comeback by the senior in his final game, Casey Dick. And that is it. Arkansas rallies some way down to win the game 31-30.
This is former Arkansas quarterback Casey Dick, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
When you hear that call, everyone knows what it is. It's Miracle on Markham 2, 2008, beating the LSU Tigers in dramatic fashion, 31-30. And we're bringing in former Arkansas quarterback Casey Dick down into the Morning Rush. Casey, you got to have some stones to make that throw, man, and you made it. One of the best plays I've ever seen watching Arkansas football. Appreciate you making some time for us on the Morning Rush.
Well, I appreciate you guys for having me this morning. It's always a pleasure to get back on the show and obviously be a part with you guys.
So I got to ask, how did you put up with Ruskin and Zach a full hour? Like, it's one thing to come on with us for 15, 20 minutes or something. You sat in the studio for an entire hour with those yuckers.
I think this answer involves me having to be politically correct. But no, it was a great time. You know, anytime you can get in on a show with you guys and obviously talk about those memories and those guys and the teams that we had and the things that we were able to accomplish was just, obviously it was a special time here at Arkansas with the guys that we had and everything we're able to do. So it's a pleasure to be on a show and just discuss this for a couple of minutes anytime we're able to.
And Casey, we'll get into some Arkansas memories coming up, but as the head coach of Fayetteville High School, I think it would be irresponsible of me not to ask just kind of the latest on what you're hearing about high school football in Arkansas this season.
You know, you hear a variety of different things. I think when you look at it from the college perspective, as far as what, you know, kind of what's happening, what happened yesterday afternoon and yesterday evening, as far as some of those conferences coming out and say that they're going to play the conference schedule. You know, from that standpoint, it kind of makes sense for colleges, but at some of those times it doesn't, just because some of those rivalry games, you know, are closer than a lot of those schools' conference games. So there's two sides to it. You know, as far as high school football, it's still up in the air. With Governor Hutchinson and the Arkansas Department of Health as to what that will look like. Will it be what we're used to? Will it be cut down? Will it be shifted or you know, will there be a new normal? So those are you know, obviously directives and that we're waiting for the policies and procedures that they'll put into place in order to make it safe for all kids across the state in order to go out and be able to participate in the game that they love.
Casey, give us an idea of what you and other schools are able to actually do right now. I mean, you're with your kids on a limited basis. Give the audience an idea of actually what's going on this time of the year.
Yeah, you know, not I mean, there is a lot. Obviously, we're able to have kids that come in the weight room that have to be socially distanced inside the weight room. You know, outside, obviously, we're able to get a little bit more creative with what we're able to do. But we're bringing kids into small groups, very small groups. We have groups of really no more than 15 that come in our weight room, and those groups transition outside, and they stay in the same groups, and they rotate through agility drills. And we're sanitizing, cleaning in weight rooms. You know, every time that those kids enter and leave the weight room, just to make it a safe, you know, a safe environment for our athletes, for our student athletes as they enter and transition. And we're doing that with all of our kids. So we're seeing about 180 kids come through the high school on a daily basis to do that. It's been awesome. The kids have been great. They've been able to, you know, adhere to the new guidelines, that they've set in place. And it's been a good time. As far as football, you know, it's a little bit different. You're not allowed, or we're not supposed to be doing any 7-on-7 or anything like that that's taking place. But, you know, we're making socially distanced football. You know, we're doing that and being creative with what we're able to do on a daily basis.
What was your reaction when you saw the Arkansas Activities Association statement earlier this week that they're planning on a season beginning on time? Then the governor pushes back the start of school till basically near the week zero. What's your reaction this morning when, you know, those two things are going to kind of collide? What do you think the future holds here for high school football, knowing week zero and the start of school are kind of hitting head to head?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that part's exciting, obviously. When you're able to start both those at the same time, it's exciting. You know, obviously with those things being pushed back, you know, We're proceeding like normal, just like the AAA statement said. You know, we haven't been advised or anything like that to do anything different. So we'll keep and, you know, obviously bringing our kids up and training them like we have in the summer, continuing with our plan that we have in action. And, you know, if anything changes, like we've told our kids, then we would obviously be and make them aware of the changes and the procedures that have been put into place in order to best suit the kids that come through our high school every single day.
Casey Dick with us here on the Morning Rush, former Arkansas quarterback, current head football coach at Fayetteville High School. Casey, let's go back to your high school days. The first college football game you ever saw was Arkansas beating Texas in Austin. And I was kind of shocked to hear that, but how much did that impact your decision on choosing the Razorbacks and where to go to school?
It was just a really, obviously, unique atmosphere. Being from Texas, but going down there and watching Matt Jones and obviously what they did to Texas on that day was pretty awesome to watch. I just remember Matt Jones obviously running all over him and pretty much, you know, doing whatever he wanted to do, running the zone read with him and Cedric Cobb. So that was really something special to watch. But I was just kind of hooked from there on out as far as, you know, with the Hog Call and everything else. It's just a special place. And then transitioning up here and being a part of an environment was just an awesome experience for all of us.
Is it wild to you how many Texas kids ends up for Arkansas, whether they're athletes, student athletes, or whether they're just regular students just going through regular study? Is it odd to see how many kids from Texas, Casey, end up in Fayetteville?
You know, I think back a couple years ago, maybe yes, but I think with the power of social media and all that stuff, it's changed the game. When you put all those statistics out there about Fayetteville being the number one place to live, and you know, in the SEC, and then you throw the atmosphere of Arkansas as far as what it has to offer with you know, 4 to 5 Fortune 500 companies within a 25-mile radius of the campus. You know, I think kids from a variety of different states look at this as an opportunity. Okay, I can go get a great degree up here, then have a lot of different options as soon as I graduate with, you know, a name or something that is associated with the university that's very close to all these companies.
So you're from Texas, but you stayed in Arkansas, and a lot of players do that. Why personally was it your decision or important for you to stay in Fayetteville, to stay in Northwest Arkansas after you finished playing? Now you're coaching in Northwest Arkansas instead of going back home. I mean, clearly you've made this home now.
Yeah, and that's what I told my wife. I got up here, and it really just felt like home. Once I left for 5 years, went back to Texas, and then pretty much after that I just looked at her and said, you know, I think we need to go back home. She said, well, where's home? And I said, in Arkansas. And so obviously she's from a small town in Arkansas, so she was excited to get back up here. And we love it up here. Don't plan on going anywhere. And obviously at a very special place with the Fayetteville School District, with Coach Jansky and the administration leadership that they're provided here. So we're more than thrilled to be at Fayetteville High School.
All right, take head coach hat off at Fayetteville and put former player hat on, and tell us what you think about what's going on with the football program right now. Have you been around Coach Pittman much? I'm sure you have, with the proximity of your program. And just what are your thoughts about what's going on with the Razorbacks?
You know, obviously in the conditions that those guys are having to walk into a new program, it's a little bit tricky for them because, you know, of all the circumstances they're having to deal with. But one thing that you hear from Coach Pittman is just he's very, very genuine in everything that he does. When he came to our clinic down in Hot Springs with the high school coaches, you know, all 12 of them got up there and talked about how genuine of a person he was, and that's why he was able to get those guys to leave big-time programs and come to the University of Arkansas, because they wanted to make it special. And I think he's doing a great job of that as far as building relationships with the coaches and his staff, and not only that, but with the players. You know, I look for big things from those guys. You know, they've been around and been around our campus and in the spring, obviously, before this hit, and they're very easy to sit down and have a conversation with, whether you want to talk football or you don't want to talk football. I think it's going to be a great situation for those guys, and we can't wait to watch them.
Casey Dick with us here on the Morning Rush. Casey, you have a unique situation where your football field is, what, a quarter of a mile, not even that, from Donald W. And like, I had friends that went to FHS, played football up there. It's just a unique thing, that the perspective between Arkansas and Fayetteville High School. How much of a relationship is there between FHS and the University of Arkansas?
You know, there's a lot, just like you mentioned, just because of the proximity that is close to there. And then, you know, a lot of the administrators' kids and coaches' kids and, you know, people like that, their kids come to our high school. So the interaction that happens between us and them is, you know, it's probably obviously more than a normal high school, but it's one that we embrace, one that we like. It's just one of the unique responsibilities that the high school has as far as in that close proximity range. So it's been great, you know, the interaction that we've had with all of them. So we continue to look forward with those.
So you mentioned just kind of the proximity campus and stuff. A lot of former great FSH players ended up going to the U of A, whether it's the Allen brothers, Brandon and Austin, Cheyenne O'Grady, the list goes on and on. How many former players come back to practice, come back to watch you guys? Is that pretty prevalent with Fayetteville High School football?
No, yeah. Last summer, I honestly lost count. You know, you got the Taylor Powells and you got the Allen brothers, and you got the Cheyenne O'Grady's, and those guys. There was probably 15 or 20 that came back last summer. So it was just awesome to watch them come back, and you know, obviously want to be at a great high school, a great program, and just come back to where it all started for them. And it's great because they are able to come back and interact and share their experiences with our kids. That, you know, a lot of people saw Taylor Powell play when they were in, you know, fifth and sixth grade, and that kind of changed their life, as well as the Allen brothers, you know. So those are big-time players that our kids look up to, as, you know, their pictures and everything are on the wall, so they know who they are every day when they walk in the building.
Casey, I always wondered what it's like for kids at Fayetteville. You know, everybody in Arkansas wants all the good kids to stay here at Arkansas and all the good kids from the other state to come to Arkansas too. But you get kids that, as Ty mentioned, a quarter mile away, maybe they want to see something different, go somewhere different. And there's been kids, and you mentioned a few of them went to Missouri and some other places and played in other places. Is there a sense of pressure, or what's it feel like on the inside for some of these kids when they're trying to weigh their decision? And they've seen Fayetteville their whole life, and maybe they're ready to see something different, but they don't want to let everybody down. What's it like when you've been there a few years now, and when they're trying to weigh these decisions out?
You know, I don't think it's a sense of pressure. I think, you know, a lot of kids, obviously in Arkansas, as you guys know, and as the entire state knows, they grow up being Hawk fans. And then when they get that offer, it's a completely different offer to them compared to any other school that, you know, that extends an offer to them. And that's something that's just special to them. I also think, you know, as far as, you know, you guys see the recruiting game and Twitter and all that stuff, and some of the kids nowadays, that, you know, they want an early offer because they feel like it means more to them the earlier that it occurs, because, you know, they believe and they trust in that particular kid. So I think those are a wide variety of different angles that have changed the game. Obviously, social media, Twitter, all that stuff has changed and is constantly evolving. But I don't think there's a sense of pressure from our guys at Fayetteville High School. I don't. I think a lot of those kids, 99% of them, obviously grow up Hog fans, and that's their dream school. That's their dream place where they want to be and they want to go and continue their education. And obviously a close proximity to allow all their friends, family, and parents to be able to come watch them.
Fair enough. You've watched Arkansas the last couple of years. What's been going on with the quarterback position, and what has to change this next year?
You know, you just got to have consistency there. You know, obviously that's kind of been a revolving door, and that's not a position to where you want a revolving door. Somebody walking in the huddle completely different than walked in the huddle just a couple of plays ago. So I think that was that's one thing that they obviously they'll get straightened out and they'll get figured out. I think there's a lot of competition in that room right now with the guys that they have. So they've just got to put their best foot forward, and the guy that walks in the huddle's got to command it and get the guys rolling.
Talking with Casey Dick here on the Morning Rush. Casey, I know you had an up-and-down career at Arkansas, and you got a lot of people said things about you, and I'm not without in that conversation, especially as a younger kid. But when you look back at your career at Arkansas and the way it ended in the spectacular fashion, as we did Miracle on Markham 2, Casey, you only got 1 year at Petrino. Do you feel like at your career at Arkansas that you were given the most opportunities to really showcase your talents?
I do. I think you, when you talk about the guys that we had, any college coach and any kid that came through the University of Arkansas would have loved to have three All-American running backs that were all back there together that were probably the best all three play college football at one time. So that was our job, was to get them the ball, because they were probably the three most electrifying players in college football at that time. So, you know, and then with Petrino, I think his particular offensive style that changed and shifted. Obviously, he's more of a pro style attack that puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback position as far as getting and shifting and getting in and out of plays. And as I've told everybody and told you guys, you know, the amount of football as far as from a defensive perspective that you learn and that you're able to take in when you're under Coach Petrino's, it was, you know, you learn a whole lot of football.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't change anything. I mean, I think when we were there my junior year, we set the school record for most points that's ever scored in a game. It was right around 38 points. So I can't argue with what they did much and with the Wild Hog and all that stuff. So it was an awesome time being there.
So you heard the clip in 2008. How much of a vindication? You heard the broadcasters talking, and we put the interview out of you talking to them on social media after the game. How much was Little Rock in 2008, the win against LSU, kind of a vindication win for the end of your career?
You know, any senior that when you have the opportunity to go out like that, it's what you want to do. You know, you want to leave a kind of a legacy that people will remember you by. And obviously, mine may or may not be a throw. Mine may be a block, which is a unique situation for a quarterback. but you know, I'll take either one of them. The time at Arkansas playing there was special. Obviously, we were able to do some special things with a great group of guys and great groups of coaches, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
What kind of coach would a Houston nut personality with a Bobby Petrino X's and O's coach be? That'd be almost a perfect coach, wouldn't it?
I would hope a pretty good one. Yes, Tommy.
I was just thinking about that as you were talking about the two coaches you played for. If you could take about a half a Petrino and a half a nut, you'd have a pretty good coach right there.
It'd be pretty good mold.
Yeah. So when you look at your football team this year, what are you expecting with Fayetteville this year?
You know, I love the way that our team has responded through all this. They've shown up every day. As I told you guys, we've run about 180 to 190 kids through our school every single day. So they've gotten up and they've gotten back in shape, and they've worked extremely hard. You know, we lost some seniors on defense. We got some guys that'll be young that are going to step up and play really hard and fast for us on defense, and on offense we'll be a little bit more experienced. With some guys that we have returning up front with our running backs and our receivers. So, I mean, I love our team. I love where we're at. I love where we're at in the process. And obviously I hope we're able to move forward with that and be able to go play on Friday nights for these seniors.
So, Casey, when you're walking around in Fayetteville and someone recognizes you, do you get asked more about the block, Miracle on Markham 2, or how your ball club's going to be this year?
Probably both. One of them usually transpires into the other. So, you know, it's awesome to sit down and talk football with anybody, whether it's, you know, obviously Fayetteville High School with the Bulldogs, and it'll usually transition into Arkansas or vice versa. We're ecstatic to be here and love and ready for the future.
You had Coach Petrino, you had Coach Nutt. Casey, who would you say is probably the biggest mentor and the one that pushed you the most to become a high school football coach?
Probably my high school football coach. I had a really young position coach that we were able to build a really awesome relationship with, and he was there for about 4 or 5 years and then left once I came to college. But he's one that I still talk today, was in my wedding, and just had a really huge impact on my life from really the eighth grade up. And he's probably, that's probably the reason why I chose to be a football coach.
You were on the staff at Bentonville West as the offensive coordinator when that school began and kind of built that thing from ground up. It kind of feels like that's what Arkansas is doing. What are some of the things that went into the process of building a team and a program from ground up that might need to go into to what Coach Pittman and his staff are doing here?
You know, number one, first and foremost, you know, you got to get to know your players. And it's not getting to know your players on, you know, a football level. You've got to get in to know, you know, why they are at the University of Arkansas, why, you know, what's their why as to what they do every single day. You know, I think that's something I learned early was, you want to get into football and you want to get into X's and O's, yes, but you got to get to know your guys. That's the biggest thing. And just build a relationship with them, because once they're able to go walk through those doors and trust you and run through a wall for you, the sky's the limit. And I think that those guys and Coach Pittman, how he's kind of wired, being very genuine, and obviously knowing some of those other guys on staff, I think they'll do a great job of building those relationships with them and just making them run through a wall for them.
Casey, before we let you go, man, I got to go back to 2007 to top off this interview. When D-Mac gets that ball, you're out wide and you're running, and you see Chad Jones catch up to him. What's going through your mind when you hit the future All-American safety and just laid him out?
I was just trying to help D-Mac. That's all I was trying to do. I didn't know that, obviously, it was going to turn into what it turned into. I just saw an area to help D-Mac that I hadn't really got a whole lot. Been able to do that a whole lot, and he was running on the sideline, and I just trying to help a player go score a touchdown. That's all we were trying to do. Yeah.
But as you tell the story more, the hit gets more vicious.
The legend
every time
grows, man.
Yeah, it's like a fish story. The hit gets more and more violent every time, right?
Well, they try to say it was a clip, but you know, it's been legal for what, 12, 15 years now. So I haven't seen a flag come out of the. I haven't seen a flag from the secondary.
Casey Dick, former Arkansas quarterback, current head coach at Fayetteville High School. Casey, we appreciate you making some time for us on the Morning Rush, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.